My title is Health Disparities in Action. African American state prison inmates outlive people outside. And in effect, going to prison is protective to African Americans. Politics, public policy, and public health. What an appropriate theme for this APHA conference. It synchronizes in no small measure with the issues I'm going to address in this presentation. Politics and health go hand in hand. It is the politicians who appropriate money for research, government intervention programs on health-related matters, make laws that impact on health, for example, mandates set aside, etc. And also in this presentation, I will be using blacks and African Americans interchangeably. The interesting thing is that the prison service, they still don't use the terminology African American. So whatever you read, they are mentioning blacks. So pardon me if I go that way. As a student of health disparities, I've read and pondered over statistics on the issue. I've also read and heard commentaries about the justice system, the incarceration rates of minorities especially. For example, how much it costs a year to jail one person, and how there are African-American men in jail than in college. This background did not prepare me for the news item that I read on January 21st, 2007. According to the report released by the U.S. Justice Department's Bureau of Justice Statistics, the nation state prison officials reported that 12,129 deaths occurred in the jails, and then they died in custody from 2001 through 2004. This does not include state-sponsored executions. The deaths over this four-year period constituted an annual mortality of 250 deaths per 100,000 inmates, which was 19% lower than the adult mortality rate in the United States general population. The report entitled Medical Causes of Death in State Prisons, written by Bureau of Justice Statistics Policy Analyst Christopher Mimola, further went on that particularly African Americans in the prisons are living longer on the average than people on the outside, with a mortality rate of 250 per 100,000 compared to 308 per 100,000. Whereas white and Hispanic prisoners had death rates slightly above their counterparts. That is, white people and Hispanics who are in jail, they die faster than those on the outside. But when it comes to blacks, those in jail are outliving those on the outside. And that is what the outrage is about. When I first read the news, I could not believe what I was reading. Not that I did not know about health disparities and its complexity or how attempts have been made to address it. However, to read that going to jail can be protective beats my mind. What a paradox. I have to wrestle with myself on countless occasions on what approach to use in this presentation. Should I adopt the scientific method or should I talk as an advocate or an activist? I finally decided to use the combination of the two. So one of the first order of business for me was to conduct research using convenient sampling method and how widespread this news item was. So I talked to colleagues, I talked to graduate and undergraduate students, and I talked to friends, Americans and people from the continent Africa, whether they saw or read this news. Of course, someone in the health field heard about health disparities and health inequities in general, but not as widespread as one would have expected. The issue then becomes, when we talk about health disparities, a term is only restricted to those of us I call members of the choir. How are we really going to work in eliminating it as one of their overarching goals? Unhealthy People 2010. Are we setting ourselves for failure or as our goal to eliminate health disparities? These are some of the issues I invite you to ponder on as I proceed. If only we here know about health disparities or few, how do we expect others not involved in the profession or the discipline? to even know about the news that black people in jail outlive those on the outside. Sure, if the news item was carried by television news, I did not hear that anyway on the TV. I only read it in the print media. Probably many would have heard about it, and there might be more dialogue as to what we can do to eliminate or minimize this pervasive action or event in our lives. So for today's discussion, I'm going to discuss health disparities, how it is being addressed, and then discuss issues I suspect may be related to the mortality differential, and conclude with recommendations to improve health of those on the outside. The medical causes of death in state prisons report indicate that the deaths were attributed or distributed as follows. Medical conditions, 89%, homicide or suicide, 8%, alcohol, drug, intoxication, 1%, accidental injury. And then we also have heart disease and heart attacks related to when you take the 89% of the medical conditions. And then cancer, 23%, liver diseases, 10%, AIDS-related, 7%. Among cancer deaths, the distribution was lung cancer, 910 deaths, liver cancer, 276, colon, 171, etc. And then among women, breast, ovarian, cervical, and uterine cancer accounted for 24% of the deaths. And then for men, testicular and prostate caused 4% of male cancer deaths. Also, death rates were higher among men than women in 9 of the 10 leading causes of death. For the top 3 causes of male death was twice the female rate. It was only septicemia that was higher among female state prisoners, and that is 10 to 5 compared to males. You may be wondering what the connections are regarding these deaths and health disparities. To answer that, let me take the next 5 minutes to talk a bit about health disparities. What do we mean when we say health disparities? The differences in the incidence, prevalence, mortality, and burden of diseases and other adverse health outcomes that exist among specific population groups in the United States. Recent studies have shown that despite the steady improvements in the overall health of the United States, racial and ethnic minorities experience a low quality of health services and are less likely to receive routine medical procedures and have higher rates of morbidity and mortality than non-minorities. Disparities in healthcare exist even when you do statistical analysis and you control for gender, condition, age, and socioeconomic status. And how do we know that disparities exist? If we look at the data from 1990 to 1999, we notice that life expectancy has increased in the United States for over 30 years. But then when you segregate the data, we find that between blacks and whites, we see the differences. Blacks still have lower life expectancy than whites. Through health indicators such as life expectancy and infant mortality have improved for most Americans, minorities still lag behind. I want to take a look at some specific health disparities figures. So we have cancer, stomach, lung, prostate, pancreas, and colon and rectum. If you look at all men, it's 537.3. This is data from CDC for 100,000 people. But an African-American white men ratio is 1.2, 1.8, 1.5 all over. It's only colon and rectal that is 1.1. So we are disadvantaged across all cancer categories. And then when we look at women, breast cancer, for all women, 132.1, African-American women, 111, and then white women, 148. That's the only area where it shows some difference. Cervical cancer, we have a 10.5 compared to 6.7. Pancreas and colon and rectal cancer, 50 compared to 44.2. And the interesting thing is that some of these cancers can be screened or can be detected early, but then we are not having early detection, or we don't have the money to go to the hospital to engage in screening. Some of the reasons attributed to health disparities include lack of access and uneven standards of care and information, racism, cultural insensitivity, and quality of life. This study examines all these issues vis-à-vis what pertains in the prison population. It has been reported that minorities are less likely to receive state-of-the-art treatment, okay, even if health insurance coverage is not an issue. For example, Schneider et al. 1998 found that while 50% of majority Medicare recipients with heart disease receive coronary artery bypass surgery and angioplasty and other cardiac catheterization procedures, only 35% of African Americans receive such treatment. So even with insurance, we're still getting the short end of the stick. In the meantime, what is being done to address these disparities? A lot. For example, in 2002, the Institute of Medicine issued a report entitled "Unequal Treatment: Confronting Racial and Ethnic Disparities in Healthcare." The report summarizes racial differences in healthcare utilization and outlines a nationwide program to address these disparities. The government also embarked on other initiatives such as the creation of the National Center on Minority Health Disparities and the NIH. And the Healthcare Finance Act, Fairness Act, was passed by Congress in 2000. Then we have the American Medical Association has referred to the report by the Institute of Medicine on healthcare disparities as a wake-up call for the medical profession, and suggests that the causes of such disparities are complex and that physicians need to play a leadership role in the elimination of healthcare disparities. And then the American Medical Association encouraged physicians to examine their own practices to ensure equality in medical care. And then there are other roles AMA is playing relating to science, ethics, medical education. It has extensive policy addressing minority health issues, including a policy of zero tolerance toward racially and cultural based disparities in healthcare. Access to medical care for all people is cornerstone. And then the AMA is involved in ongoing efforts to increase the number of minority physicians, so at least we can have culturally sensitive issues when a minority patient goes to see a minority physician. And then other agreements with Kaiser Foundation, Robert Wood Johnson, to increase physician awareness about racial and ethnic disparities. And then furthermore, the Department of Health and Human Services selected 6 focus areas for emphasis because they reflect areas of the disparity that are known to affect multiple racial and ethnic minority groups at all life stages. These are areas in which racial minorities experience serious disparities in health access and outcomes. Some of these are cancer screening and management. We know African American women are more than twice as likely to die of cervical cancer than white women, and then more likely to die of breast cancer than any other ethnic group. Cardiovascular disease, heart disease, and stroke are the leading causes of death in the United States in all racial and ethnic groups. But then in 2000, rates of death from diseases of the heart were 29% higher among African American adults than among white adults. Diabetes. In 2000, African Americans were 2 times more likely and Hispanics 1.9 times more likely to be diagnosed with diabetes compared to their white counterparts. Then when we come to HIV, the big one, it has been decimating our population. And even though we form 12.3% of the U.S. population, however, we have accounted for 40% of the 929,000 estimated HIV cases diagnosed since the epidemic began. So if we are 12% and we are contributing 40%, that's a very serious issue. And then the prevalence of AIDS in the African American community is 9 times that of the white population. And in 2001, HIV AIDS was among the top 3 causes of death for African American men aged 25 to 54. Yes, and among the top 4 causes of death for our women aged 20 to 54. And then HIV is the number 1 cause of death for African American women aged 25 to 34, one of the most productive years of our lives. The same way when it comes to diagnosis and so on, even when we are diagnosed, we don't have money to take the therapy and all other issues that give us bad health outcomes. And then another issue we can look at is infant mortality, immunization, etc. Our senior citizens who are 65 and older are less likely to have flu shots. Infant mortality rates: in 2000, the black to white ratio of infant mortality was 2.5, and the widening gap between blacks and white infants is a trend that has persisted over the past two decades, the past 20 years. And another issue is mental health. We have less access and availability for minorities. We are less likely to seek treatment, and even when we do, it is only in emergency rooms. And then we are less likely to receive inpatient care. Hepatitis: black teenagers and young adults become infected with hepatitis B 3 to 4 times more often than those who are white. And then syphilis: African American 75%, white 16%, and Hispanics 8%. So syphilis reflects one of the most glaring examples of racial disparity in health status, with the rate for African Americans nearly 50 times the rate for whites. You may be wondering why all these statistics, but I'm trying to use this to set the stage for what I'm going to discuss later, why when our people go to jail, they are surviving rather than those of us in the outside. The methods. We realized that there are some states with 10% of the black population, so we excluded that. So when the news broke, what I did was that we called a couple of correctional facilities, asked them to send us information about their breakdown on the racial composition that they have, and look at what is going on, and then the kind of treatment they give the prisoners in terms of food, healthcare, etc., and see whether that is also available on the outside. Then that is how the hypothesis will be analyzed. As a result, we are concerned with only those states that had about 20% black population. The higher the black population, the more likely it is that to make a contribution in rates of mortality between inmates and those outside. For example, if Wyoming as less than 0.001%, even if they jail all the black people in Wyoming and they give them the excellent health care, it's not going to impact on the overall health care. So that's why we look at people, we look at the states which had higher higher percentage of African Americans. We contacted correction officials by phone, and they directed us to an internet address, or they mailed to us the information we requested. The information called from these materials are provided in subsequent tables as follows. Okay, the first presenter gave some statistics relating to incarceration. And at the end of 2004, United States incarcerated 2 million people. I never knew that there are so many people in prison until I started working on this project. And it looks like we have a big human relations disaster going on when we just try to imprison all our people. 2 million people. About 8.1% black males aged 25 to 29 were in the state or federal prison, compared to 2.6 of Hispanic males and 1% of white males. Although incarceration rates drop with age, the percentage of black males aged 45 to 54 in prison at the year end was 3.1, etc. So this is the age distribution. When you look at the 25 to 29 year group, we have 8.1% of black people in jail, and then for whites only 1.1% and Hispanic 2.6%. Meanwhile, we constitute 12.3% of the U.S. population. And then these are the figures for the jails. Arkansas, we have a total number of people in jail, 13,665. We are 45.7 black, 53.4 white, and the mean age is 34, and the yearly cost is 17,000. When we look at Georgia, 61%, Missouri 40.8%, Michigan, okay, Louisiana 72%. It looks like that's all that they do in that state. Michigan 53.2%, New Jersey 63%. That was also another big surprise for me. And then Pennsylvania 51.8%. And then the yearly cost of jailing 1%, that's what we have, $17,000, New York $36,000, Michigan $24,000. And this, okay, New York 45.7%. Black, white 53.4%, South Carolina, and so on. So the question now is, well, what is happening in jails that may not be available to blacks living outside, living on the outside? Okay, basically the availability in jail of factors that cause adverse health outcomes. So factors that will cause adverse health outcomes on the outside, they are available in jail. For example, good health care costs. So when somebody comes to prison, the tests are conducted on HIV, syphilis, diabetes, asthma, hepatitis. Then the one is treated. There are contracts with physicians, specialists, hospital, and specialty services to serve prisoner health care needs, substance abuse and treatment needs. In May 2004, New York State reported increasing inmate health care by 63% since 1995. While the inmate population declined by 9%, they were able to even increase health care. Interviews were conducted on each inmate upon admission, medical history. They provide physical, dental, and x-ray exams. Screenings are done for lab work on TB, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and other sexually transmitted infections. The inmates are provided with educational materials on TB, HIV, etc. Medical specialty consultations are arranged. HIV testing and HIV deaths were reduced in New York by 94%. In 1995, they had 258 deaths in the New York State Correctional System, and in 2003, only 15. So if you look at that, you see HIV positive person in jail is more likely to survive compared to the one outside. In the report that is under discussion, it was also stated that nearly 93% of all illness fatalities were provided medications for the fatal illness. Diagnostic tests such as x-rays, MRI exams, and blood tests were performed on all the 89% of these inmates. In a report entitled Medical Problems of Inmates, 1997, more than 8 out of the 10 state inmates reported having a medical exam since being admitted to prison. 60% reported being checked by staff to see if they were sick or injured or intoxicated at the time of admission. And about 82% were asked questions about their health and medical history. The next thing I want to look at is nutrition. And it's not on the PowerPoint. A couple of years ago in New York State, the prisoners sued the correctional department that the food they were being served was not hot enough. So the court asked the corrections department to provide evidence that the food was hot. The department had no documentation. So they were asked to now make sure the food is hot. So in New York State, every food that is being served now, you have to record the temperature of the food, whether it is breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It has to be documented. So we are talking about good nutrition while in jail, but then when you are outside, you don't have that. Okay. Another thing is that we have a social support. The prisoners support one another because they are being incarcerated. So there's this camaraderie in jail, which people on the outside may not necessarily have, and we know that social support is very, very important in times of illness and other issues. And then protection from homicide. It's likely that since most prisoners are young, being in jail may shield them away from violence in the streets, hence increasing their longevity. And then, in prison, you have adequate housing. Person is being provided with housing, which we may not have here. So if it is winter and all those other problems, the person will not have that. And then exercise. They have exercise facilities. You can lose weight. You can go to the gym, etc. Now, what are my recommendations? In this paper, I've discussed the news item, discussed health disparities, and made specific references to some diseases while detailing attempts to address these disparities. While agreeing that these are laudable and concrete moves by the AMA, the United States government, and so on, I believe that more needs to be done, else we will continue to read reports about prison being protective for blacks. I've also discussed the availability of medical care in some state prisons and how they may not necessarily be available to blacks on the outside. I will now turn the discussion into some recommendations which I believe, if fully addressed, may increase survival of blacks on the outside and hence eliminate the inequity in medical care which is likely to have made blacks in jail outlive their counterparts on the outside. The following recommendations, which are not mutually exclusive, are made. There is no denying that universal care, universal health care, is the way to go. Without it, there is treatment delays, delays in picking up prescription, annual screenings, and so on. So that is the way to go. We may say, oh well, we don't want to go the Canadian way or the European way, but until we have that, we are going to be having problems with health disparities. Elimination of poverty, or at least a massive expansion of the safety net. The first two recommendations are directly related. Many times we are informed that there is no money, but we are able to find money to finance wars. Iraq war is costing us billions of dollars. We are able to build more prisons to house people who get on the wrong side of the law. Let's remember that poverty is a vicious cycle. For example, we know that generally poor people die younger than the rich. And infants born in low socioeconomic status have low birth weights compared to those born rich in richer socioeconomic status. So from infancy, the cards are decked against the kid, from the cradle to the grave. Poverty can lead to sex trading for non-drug related offenses, and it can lead to violence. And once a poor person is diagnosed with a disease, which can even be amenable to medical intervention, they are more likely to experience poor outcomes. Poverty can lead to violating the law and then ending up in jail. There's a massive infusion of money to address poverty on a grand scale, characteristic of a Marshall Plan, that's a huge urban renewal project, can accelerate elimination of poverty in our society. All that is required is the political will to make public policy to impact on public health. The new innovative programs and policies that we have, how are they disseminated to the grassroots level? The people who matter. Cervical cancer screening. We have Gardasil vaccine now. Are they fully aware of the health disparities? And then we also have health literacy problem. How effective are we in reaching people before diseases clinically manifest? We're talking about mammograms, lipid profile, pap smear, PSA, and so on, colonoscopy, HIV testing. We need social support, because its absence can accelerate death. And then the issue of religion and health. African American pastors, we should have total health, not some health. In our churches, we may do health screenings for cholesterol, diabetes, hypertension. But what are our pastors' attitude towards sexual health? Our pastors don't want us to talk about sex. They don't want to talk about HIV. They don't want to talk about homosexuality. And without that, we have people infecting our sisters, our mothers, because they are gay, and at the same time they cannot explicitly be gay, unlike in white community. Healthcare that is safe, effective, efficient, patient-centered, culturally competent, and timely should be provided. Testing for HIV for people coming out of jail, and our health communities, our brothers keeper, yearly screenings, patient navigators at the community level. And then we need maternal education. Conclusion, let's recall that the deaths of the inmates as reported over this 4-year period constitute an annual mortality rate of 250, which was 19% lower than the adult mortality rate in the United States general population. It only became apparent when subgroup analysis was done and white and Hispanic prisoners had death rates slightly above their counterparts on the outside. But it was only in the black population that the rate was 57% lower than among the overall population. May I conclude that, as is always the case, multi-level approaches to problem solving are better than the single ones. It is not that we are advocating discrimination against prisoners on issues of health. They are entitled to the best health care, so also are others who are not in jail. It is not a zero-sum game. We do not need 100% turnaround on all issues I have raised in this paper, but a combination of 5% improvement here, a 20% there, can go to minimize the differences. Health disparities may continue to stay with us in a long time unless we address the structural imbalances that give rise to issues related to poverty and its interrelated variables, such as literacy, racism, health information. We may continue reading about mortality differentials in favor of blacks who are in jail. Maybe there may be an outrage one day when, nasty as it may sound, the headline reads, "Going to jail makes black live longer."